and it loose that. And call Karen outside, please. Yes, let's start with the next, before we start with the next presentation, remember that in the previous one, we couldn't take questions. Yes, so let's quickly start with those questions. Mr. Swart and Schneeman, and I know that Schneeman had questions.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Let's do it this way. Let's take the presentation, then so that we don't waste time. Yeah. Transport, I hope you are ready. Before you start transport, I would want you to go into the real issues of spending, why not spending, what are the reasons, all that information. All right, you may start.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for this opportunity. We have before you a pretty substantial presentation to make. It would help if we were guided in terms of how much time we have. Then we would limit our actual presentation to highlights, but supply the information so that we can deal with questions if they may arise and relate to the balance of the information. We have before us close to 100 slides, but I'm sure most of it is more information than not, and we can just take through it and deal with the highlights specifically.
Okay.
Chair, whether you give us 10 minutes or 20 minutes, it would help us so we could frame exactly 20, 30 hour.
Yeah, I'll give you 30 minutes, and if you can spend less than 30 minutes, so that you can give members more time for interaction, it will still be fine. But the maximum is 30.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, we also must apologize for another member of our team who is going to join us. The flights are not as reliable today, so please don't be surprised when our team immediately expands. It's one more person who is joining us, actually. So we apologize in advance for that person. As required in your correspondence to us, Chairperson, we've made preparation for this joint budget committee and are dealing specifically with the issues of expenditure, under expenditure, on a program-by-program basis, giving full explanations for the financial year 2007-2008. What basically that contents page indicates the outline to the presentation, and I won't go through that in detail. We'll just indicate the areas which we will be presenting on. We'll also be dealing with expenditure over the past 7 years, the adjusted budgets and environments for 2007-2008. What that particular graph indicates is importantly the increase in the allocation to transport in 05-06, 06-07, but also happily to report the existing trend of what we are now on average 97.5% expenditure on a year-on-year basis. If we move on to the next one, we then split the expenditure according to current and capital, and Chairperson, if I may just indicate, you will see later on that even our current is slightly misleading. It includes a significant amount of what we call operational capital, which basically has led in one instance to a request for rollover and under expenditure, but it's not clean current expenditure as we know it. It contains a bit of capital expenditure as well, but we'll be able to elaborate on that. So we then basically indicate the adjusted budget for 2007-2008, which indicates the rollover amount of 386, but the total original budget at 15.857 billion, and then after adjusted budget, 16.543 billion. And then we indicate quite clearly in detail all of the areas that benefited from the adjusted budget and the additional amounts allocated. In addition to that, we then give also indication of areas of environments during the financial year. We also indicate areas from programs from which the money was shifted and programs it was shifted to. And then in instances, we give reasons for that shifting and the various areas of expenditure that it was shifted to.
It's important for us to know why.
Okay. If I may just spend a little bit of time on environments, one of the important issues has been the issue of big events which have decisions that have been taken relating to them sometimes already post the MTEF process, decisions that are taken in the African Union, and the financing of the October Transport Month, whose decision is taken at the Transport Lukhotla in June of the preceding year. We have resorted to better planning for these activities, and in fact our Transport Lukhotla this year will take decisions about the regularity of these events. These are events that have only happened over the last 2 to 3 years and are not generally something that is a constant on our budget, but is led by decisions that are taken by our joint Transport Lukhotla, which includes the Minister and MECs, about a particular event in the year. So we generally then allow for virements from programs and finance that through savings principally, and that's by far the largest amount that refers to that. The second also relates to increased funding requirements for increased capacity in flight operations and airworthiness inspectorate of the South African Civil Aviation Authority, quite an anomaly arising out of the Federal Aviation Administration of the United States concluding a somewhat adverse audit when coming to South Africa last year on these particular areas and requiring us to have interventions in order to retain our Category 1 status in order to be able to continue to fly into United States airspace. So that was a specific intervention arising out of an audit completely unforeseen at that particular stage. And then another environment in centers of development, which are the areas where we do capacity training. In that particular instance, we had more students than we anticipated in that year. And then transport studies in Czechoslovakia, a bilateral agreement that we had, which came to fruition at a particular time. We'd been negotiating it for some years, and therefore the amount had not been budgeted for specifically. The freight logistics databases and facilitation, again, as the work unfolded in the facilitation of the freight forums, it became quite clear that we would need additional funding, and we were able to allocate that from savings in other areas. So was the area of compensation of employees, and the final area relates to communication and IT projects and cover to the cost of performance awards. Again, those are areas that we required to finance from savings and shifts from other areas. If I may proceed, Chairperson, what we'll do in this particular area is just basically take you program by program. There's a summary page, and then we deal again with the over and under expenditure. The issues around expenditure per month, I think, are self-explanatory. They give you a sense of the trend of expenditure in that particular program, so we need not worry about that. We'll just focus specifically on the two specific areas. With respect to program one. Let's go back one step. With respect to program one, I think what is important to note there is the goods and services area. As we unpack the variance in that budget, we'll be able to give full explanations for that. If I may just indicate to committee members, it's probably worth your while just focusing on the yellow part, which shows you the variance in the budget versus expenditure, and then the percentage of budget variance is also quite an important indicator. But in the next page, we then give you a sense specifically of what those amounts, that amount that indicated there, constituted of, and areas where, for instance, under goods and services, funds were shifted for National Land Transport Information System and Arrive Alive, projects that were not previously funded. And then the second other important one is mainly in the information technology infrastructure under expenditure in that particular area. The total under expenditure there is around 3.82% as indicated in the previous slide. Move on. Expenditure per month, and that basically gives you an indicator. Again, because the large amount of that relates to the October Transport Month, World Remembrance Day, you can see the spike around October, November, December with respect to those issues, and also the Arrive Alive program that creates that spike in February, March, leading to the Easter period. Program two, what we also highlight there, again, under expenditure, the biggest variance in the area of goods and services. And if we move on to the next page, we're able to give you in great detail the explanations for all of those areas and the reasons. One of the important indicators there is the first one that relates to savings, where we had budgeted for outsourcing policy, certain of the policy programs, we were able to do them in-house, and that resulted in a saving rather than outsourcing it and making consultants conclude that work. And that accounts for the 4.3 million that's indicated there. In the next part of the presentation, we indicate policy developments that were delayed either because we got substandard bids and work was not completed, and that amounts to 5 million, and it's broken down in those various areas that are indicated there. If I may just take one as a highlight, for instance, scholar transport policy. We were almost there in implementing that policy until we got a decision from the Department of Education that their MINMEC had resolved not to transfer the function. So we stopped dead in track. So scholar transport remains with Department of Education and is not going to be transferred to transport until further notice. And that basically is what would then result in what we thought we're going to secure as a decision from Department of Education, which we didn't, and that resulted by far in the largest amount as indicated there in the policy development area where there were significant delays. That gives you a sense of expenditure per month, and those generally are the trends with respect to policy projects throughout the year. Move on. Program 3 relates to the variance there, again, under goods and services of 24 million, which is about 10.86% under expenditure. And as we give detailed explanations, that's basically transport regulation, which includes civil aviation regulation, maritime regulation, and road regulation. And in that particular area, we indicate the largest amount under expenditure relates to road transport regulation, where 5.1 million was underspent because of late invoices that were received. The work was done, however, it's just they were received after the closure of the financial year, and 2.3 million, and then 2.8 million in the maintenance of the E-Native system, which basically we would consider a saving rather than an under expenditure because we're able to do the work for less, so to speak. The next important area would be, in terms of largest amounts, would be the maritime regulation, which underspent by 3.7 million, mainly due to lack of capacity and in order to develop and finalize the Maritime Safety Coordinating Center. This was actually expansion work that was anticipated in the center, and because of lack of capacity, we were not able to conclude that work from the departmental side. You proceed. The expenditure per month gives you a sense of areas where which influence expenditure, such as late invoices submitted for oil pollution prevention and prepayment, and in the previous financial year, and 18.5 million for special investigations, which was only generalized in expenditure in November 2007, not HR. 2007. And the next bullet also indicates invoices for development maintenance of E-natives, which were paid in June 58, 43, and 39, which is June, December, and February of 2007 and 2008, and the amount was only generalized in March 2008. But that also includes some arrangement we have with Treasury around the income in relation to that, and holding it in a suspense account and claiming it from the national revenue and all of that, which makes it slightly complicated. Program 4, basically the biggest variance again is in goods and services, and has two significant areas of transfer. And if we just go to the explanatory notes, you'll be able to see the explanations relate to the biggest area by far is an under expenditure on Shobhagalula program. We had anticipated, firstly, we had increased our target for Shobhagalula to quite a significant amount, and setting a target of 1 million bicycles by 2010. But in reality, as we're starting to implement the program, we started with experiencing problems, also more importantly problems in the manufacturing capacity in the country, but also our own budget limitations. I think the allocation that we got was far, far less than we had anticipated, and we had to then make adjustments, and there was a delay in the program because of that. But that program continues quite successfully. In the National Airports Development Plan, we had to break down the process around the appointment of probably one of the biggest planning exercises in South Africa, which is basically includes the planning for all airports, aerodromes, airstrips, everything that ever carries an aircraft in South Africa. So we had to break down the process of getting to the appointment of the consultants and ensure that we do that in a much more detailed way rather than just issuing a tender and getting people appointed, and that led to some extent to some delays. It's an extensive exercise that we're embarking upon there. But I'm happy to say the program is rolling now and is currently under implementation. We should be receiving the first report sometime this year. In October this year we'll receive the final product of that exercise. The others relate to other delays such as the NLTB, the National Land Transport Bill, and development of guidelines and standards for monitoring of transport planning, and a minimum requirement for integrated transport plan. All of those delays there led to the under expenditure of 8.66, as is indicated there. That gives you a sense of the monthly expenditure, and it's important for us to highlight the reasons there is because that program in the transfer budgets deals with both SANRAL allocations, but more importantly PTIS. And PTIS is a public transport infrastructural system fund that basically goes largely to host cities. It's now only host cities. It will change later. And we'll deal with the detail of that and SARCC allocations within PTIS as well, as I indicated. Program 5, basically the indication on Program 5, again, biggest variance on goods and services, and in that area it relates to the delays in finalization between the department and provinces on joint freight logistics projects, which include freight logistics forums, the freight logistic monitoring framework, and the development of freight data banks at the tune of 1.2 million. But largely, this is a relatively small program at this stage because it really doesn't have an extensive capital amount allocated to it. Most of the work on freight logistics is about the establishment of systems, and it all accrues from the recently approved freight logistics strategy, which was approved in 2005. So we're in the initial stages of rolling out the program, and these various elements are the building blocks of the rollout of that particular program. But we hope to see significant changes with the conclusion of that in the next coming years as the program converts to implementation. On program number six, there again we indicate a variance there largely on goods and services, but I'd like members to also note the big transfer amounts that relate both to bus subsidies, SARCC, and other public transport, including Gautrain and other public transport funding that comes under that specific program. The explanations for the under-expenditure there, we were supposed to embark on a feasibility study for rail operations and a requirement that we've been discussing with National Treasury around looking at an alternative financing system for rail infrastructure moving forward. We did some of the work, but we were not able on time to conclude the work around the perspective of government with respect to those rail options prior to us going out on tender and issuing for bids. I think I was very responsible for this, Chair, because I thought to a large extent government needed to reach its own conclusions about what it would see as viable options rather than throwing it out to consultants to tell us what we should do, because invariably consultants would have many, many ideas but would not be informed from a policy perspective. So we had significant delays from that perspective, but also in the relocation of the program to SARCC, because really it is about the future financing of SARCC. More importantly, starting to look at the long distance and commuter routes. Long distance because I think we've reached the decision that our ability to finance Shosholoza Main, which has recently been transferred from Transnet to SARCC, is very limited from the fiscus, and we needed to look at alternative financing mechanisms that would allow us to do that. So we have that rollover. The work is being concluded now, and it will be done within SARCC, and we'll be able to move on as soon as we're done with that. The second important area to note under public transport is the impact of shortage of funding on the taxi recap program, which basically arises from inadequate allocation versus the rate of scrapping during the course of the year. Around November, December, we started really panicking about the possibility of running out of funds by the time we get to March. So we started sending a message to the scrapping agency to kind of slow down a little bit so that we could move at a rate at which would be manageable. However, in reality, that rate happened then to be slightly too slow so that they were not able to conclude and finish all that money. But that money is required, and basically if we get permission to roll it over, would be absorbed immediately. We are in negotiations with Treasury about increasing the allocation for even this year and next year, particularly in this area. Largely, the perspective around allocation has been influenced by previous trends, particularly in 05, 06, and 06, 07, around the rate of scrapping, but experience has now shown us that rate has doubled, quadrupled, and moved at a completely unexpected rate, and therefore we hope budget allocations will be adjusted in order to accommodate that. The next important area is we had to also withhold 8.9 million from Santaco. One of the conditions of our contract of financing Santaco is that they would be able to submit reports and financial statements on money that we allocate to them. In this particular instance, we had no joy in securing that, but also it was followed together with them, quite honestly, by a forensic investigation. So we've withheld those funds until such time that we have clarity on the financial health of that institution, and I'll be able to allocate back to them as is indicated. And those really are the big issues around public transport. Program 7, and that basically gives you a sense of the monthly expenditure. The monthly expenditure on Gautrain, if you want to particularly highlight on that graph is indicated in yellow and shows an increase around November, December, and that's primarily because we pay in accordance to payment schedule in that program. It just so happened to be at that time, and we pay on work completed. The concerning area, though, is what would indicate as the bus subsidies area, which will indicate has a significant funding shortfall, but we'll discuss that later as we move on in the program. If we can move on to program or expenditure on program 7. Yeah, on program 7, and this is the public entity oversight, it relates to the management of our public entities. The variance there, the biggest variance there is 15.937, which again is goods and services. One of the biggest contributors to that is the delays in the road accident fund area, with the delays in concluding the regulations relating to the Act in order to deal with the provisions of a liability, but also we had some delays in relation to concluding the method of compensation because of consultation we had with the Department of Health in that particular area. We would be able, once we've concluded those two things, to roll out the program and complete the one other challenge that we do face in RAF is a whole series of what seem to be never-ending court challenges around either the Act, the Amendment Act itself and its promulgation, and whether we can then proceed with regulations. And this is something that is completely beyond our control, and I think we'll just have to keep a watching brief on the extent to which government has some control over the RAF process. They would indicate the vested interest in relation to what would come as the risk, fundamental restructuring of the RAF is significant out there, and our pace is likely to be determined by the extent of that objection or opposition to what we're trying to do. That also gives you an indication of the monthly payments and expenditure per month in that area. Again, you see that significant increase, which relates to the CAA issue that I related to, of really saving our Category 1 status and dealing with the FAA issues as was required. And that gives you a spike in that month, which is slightly abnormal. In the next area, we'll then be dealing with the issue around compensation of employees, and the expenditure is indicated there. We also explain there the incentive bonus and the impact that it has in the month of March in terms of what we're able to do for levels 1 and 1 to 12. But I think more importantly, if we just want to give you a sense of what the department looks like, importantly, we have an approved structure, proposed and approved structure of 1,020 posts. That's where we would like to be. But when we did the restructuring exercise, we agreed with National Treasury that 1,020 was not to be funded in one go. So we've been funding and increasing the post on an annual basis and slowly increasing it to arrive at that 1,200 posts eventually. What we do have in practice is 668 posts that have been activated and 352 posts that remain inactive. And activated there means funded or not funded. So importantly, the current staff establishment is 688. What we'd like is 1,020. We had a vacancy rate basically at around 35.47% for 2007-2008 up to March. But we've been working on this thing of reducing vacancy rate quite significantly, and it's starting to bear fruit and pay results. We're able to see quite a significant jump, for instance, through certain policy manipulations that we found to enable us to fast-track certain of those processes, and we're now at 30.39% vacancy rate. This issue has remained quite important for the Department of Transport, and it's a matter that, as we've deliberated upon in the various committees, have indicated our remaining commitment to filling those vacancies. There are a number of challenges with respect to that. One, challenge is the kind of basically lack of skills in the industry for, highly specialized posts. But secondly, I think we had to review our recruitment processes. We had to develop a retention strategy. We had to ensure that we take certain policy decisions about the employment of or processes for internal advertisements rather than going to advertise outside at particular levels of posts, just so to fast track the process. In fact, one of the significant reductions in that has come as a result of basically creating a vacancy database, because every time we advertise for, let's say, a post at deputy director level, we get 3,000 applications, when in fact out of those 3,000 only maybe 100 would even go onto the shortlist for qualification. So we found a way of keeping those in-house so that you don't really have to advertise all the time, but reuse that database every time you require a post. And for a department, importantly, whose vacancy rate is not stagnant, and the important thing is the understanding of what happens every new financial year as we get new allocations. We start off with a X number of posts. When we get to April, National Treasury allocates more money to us. Our posts increase. Immediately our vacancy rate increases because of those increased posts. We're almost back to square one, having reduced it by that end of the financial year. And now we have to fill the ones that we hadn't filled last year, plus the new ones that we've allocated in that year. So basically, I think that has been the challenge around vacancies. But we're quite happy to see a downturn in this area. The Department of Public Service and Administration has set a target for all departments to halve their vacancy rates by March 2009. We're quite confident we're on track to meet that particular target. I would also say this happens to be a problem that basically the entire public service is challenged with. One of the other important things is the high level of vacancies by definition creates fluidity in the public service. And we're still looking for a solution to this. We'll be happy the day that we find it. Because by implication, what it means is that if you have, in all departments, many vacancies, then you have what we call a phenomenon of job hopping, where officials jump around government departments in government and move from one department, spend 6 months, move to the other, get a higher post, move to the other, get a higher post. And we're still trying to find a government-wide solution that would curb that. We tried suggesting that we limit people to 2 years in a post so that job hopping is just not a phenomenon that we have to deal with. But we'll see as to the outcome of that. That employment equity status indicates our posts. I would be able to indicate we think we have met most of the targets that are set for us. We were above 2% of disabled people. We are now at 1.9%, and that came with new appointments, and basically we would be floating around an average of 2%, so no, we're not worried about that for all staff. But importantly, for women, we would quite happily indicate we've exceeded even the 50% target at all levels. We even come very close to exceeding that target at SMS level, where we have 44% women. That gives you the detail around the rest of the post, and I won't go into that. Let's just move on. On transfer payments, basically, can I just highlight the transfer payments in those areas for actual budget, actual expenditure against budget allocated, and in most instances, the transfer payments reflect a zero variance. Move on. Those transfer payments are indicating PTIS on slide number 39, which indicates the amounts that we pay for 2010 in those various host cities, and that's the expenditure of transfer payments per month, as indicated there. Move on there. Gautrain expenditure, we've already spoken to that. Important to note is that, but more importantly is to note that Gautrain is coming to an end in 2010-2011, except from our own financial perspective. PTIS has increased to about 13.6 billion, and that's over 6 years. We're currently at 3.4 this year, and the other peak amount is going to be 4.4 in 2010-2011. The budget challenges that we face, Well, one of the challenges is I think we have embarked on quite an ambitious program in financing transport infrastructure generally from a policy and a strategy perspective. The reality is that we would not be able to finance all of it from the fiscus, and we're looking at creative ways of alleviating that. For instance, in this last financial year for 08-09, we made an additional funding request for $44 billion. Our budget then was $16 billion, and we only got an additional amount of about $6 billion. That's the reality. So to some extent, it requires us to rationalize our programs and basically prioritize areas where we can spend. In such certain instances, that like the rail sector, it's a holding mechanism to keep us afloat, but it's not real new big investments that moves us forward in any meaningful way. One of the important areas is the financing of integrated rapid public transport networks. The other, as I indicated earlier, is the need to transform the subsidy system, or basically the growth of passenger numbers in the bus subsidy area with no additional allocations. We're discussing that with Treasury, and we hope this year we're going to finalize that and put that to bed and get a big allocation for budget for buses for the first time in 09-10. Because in fact, that is something that we must achieve coming out of MTEC this year. If we get the other area that was sending red warning lights is the implementation of road infrastructure strategic framework. It's a red warning light. We need to think critically about how we deal with this, and we'll be doing particular presentations in that area. Move on there. PTIS projects, that just gives you a list of where they are. Those are the host cities or the cities that get allocation. The next is just lists of where the projects are. In fact, in another package, we've even got pictures to show you progress in each one of those areas. Just move on. List of projects in the various cities, etc., Nelson Mandela Bay, Eteguini. Most of these projects are currently under implementation. One of the challenges that we do face with the PTIS funding, one is in the smaller cities, a certain under-expenditure by the municipalities because of lack of capacity, Rustenburg, Bombela, and Bulukwane, a point in case. But in other areas like Johannesburg, Eteguini, we've got a different challenge, and the challenge is they have too much money, so they don't claim from us when they are supposed to claim. They use their own money and only submit claims towards the end because they don't need actually to get the money to finance actual projects. But that's an issue that we're seized with, and we're working very steadily with those municipalities to ensure progress on implementation of PTIS. On SRCC, principally we're presenting a case of a requirement for an increase in the public investment in this area. And there we show you the allocations and the capital grant and how the money is utilized, Shosholoza Main, the rolling stock infrastructure and where it's allocated. Move on. That then gives you a sense of the road from SANRAL, the funding we provide to SANRAL, the road network in the country, the amount, the total amount that has been incorporated increasing from 6,000 to 16,000 kilometers. We give you the detail of the financing of that. And then we also give you a sense of the operating summary for the non-toll, and we give you a summary on the toll as well later on.
All right, TG. I think because I gave you extra 5 minutes.
I think we're done now.
Yeah, I gave you extra 5 minutes, and the slides that are remaining, it seems it's slides of the things that you want us to see.
Yes.
So
thank you.
You've covered issues.
It's a detail around Sandor, and that brings us to the end. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Members, questions? Honorable Fops, do you want to kick start, or should I?
It's not a substantive one. Are we saying that the capital here on page 34, we're going so fast I lost track where we were then on page 34, that capital expenditure was not really applicable to the presentation. I just want to get that clear. You see, it refers to the capital expenditure as at the 31st of March 2008, and I just want to clarify that, so we don't have to look at that.
We need that one. You see? Capital expenditure.
It doesn't matter if it's transfer or not.
No, whether it's transfer or not, but we need information on that one because we're going to ask questions based on capital, whether it's transfer or expenditure. Page, I think it's slide.
It's 68 or something, is it? Yeah. Was under a section called Accelerating the Momentum for Change, and I was just not sure because we were going quite fast in where this was applicable.
This is the SARCC Capital Expenditure Program. It's a transfer, but we're now giving you the detail within SARCC how they split that transfer and what expenditure patterns are within SARCC, if that assists.
Actually, DG, what she wanted it, whether we are saying it's not important, and it's important because we are interested in knowing what finally happens to transfer payments. So if you can briefly tell us about that one.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. What we indicate, if we may go back just to give you a sense of reference, on our capital program under public transport, we show you a transfer to SARCC. What we then do is transfer that amount to those two slides and show you how it's to be utilized. And then we indicate rolling stock, 1.356 budget, and spent to date is 1663, which basically means a variance of or over expenditure of 122. Infrastructure, 185. Spent to date, and that's 84% of what was budgeted. IT systems, 32 spent to date, 94% of what was budgeted. And then we give you the property portfolio, which is Intersight and what they are spending, a subtotal of 1.962 of spent to date compared to the annual budget. And then we also indicate on E, what is noted E there, an additional allocation they get from PTIS. SARCC is also allocated from PTIS, and they get that 137, which we indicate 20% of which has been spent, giving you a grand total of 2.099 billion, which has been spent to date compared to the budget and the 89% expenditure for SARCC.
Members, questions? I hope that lunch has not disempowered you. Yes. Because earlier on you were very, very lively and active. Ms. Fox, I'll give you the opportunity whilst other members are still busy with their questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'll leave the vacancy issue just for the moment here, but I'm just going through this as we move along. And there was a reference at one stage to a ports regulator and the delay in certain expenditure due to the non-establishment of the ports regulator. I can't find the page itself. The other thing here was with respect, I must say, Chairperson, I welcomed the department's acknowledgement that there was a certain regularity in what may have been seen as unexpected events taking place and that this was now going to be looked at in June. Now, this June Lochotlo, or the June meeting, is this looking at the 2009-2010 budget? So, you know, because obviously it's not looking at this year's budget now, it's the planning one. And it's already taking us quite far into the future, but if we can get a clarification. On the other points, various places it's spoken about late invoices and about five instances as the reason for the delay, the submission of late invoices. And another two areas have been on the bidding processes. I think there have been two or three references to that. Now, what would be helpful from the department's view, although maybe Treasury may have come in later, when one talks about a late invoice, the work has been done. Because you're not invoicing out for work not done. The work is done and the invoice is then submitted. By late, we are meaning after a particular time in the last month of the expenditure year. And you're saying that once that is received, which may be on the 3rd of April, it then becomes a late invoice because you were unable to pay for it at the end of March, the end of the financial year. I want to get a clear understanding of this because there are also things such as suspense accounts and so on. One should have a pretty good idea of that expenditure. So I would like to know the mechanics of the so-called late invoicing. And then other payments are being made on payment schedules. The payment schedules, is that due to a contractual agreement so that no invoices are submitted and they simply get paid X amount a month depending on the tracking of work done, or is it also invoiced out as well? We had another reference to a few little problems where we spoke, I forget where it was exactly, but sometimes in an arrangement with Treasury, I think it may have been even reference to NATO or NATIS, when funds are put into suspense accounts for utilization later. Now, is the suspense account utilized in the next financial year and therefore it doesn't qualify as a rollover because it sits in a suspense account? I just want to, you know, get the dynamics of this right. My final question just at this point, I think I lost track just then. I love cycling myself, so I was just wondering what all these bicycles are for. But I lost track, you know, at that point. And are we going the Malawian route, or what route is this? Thanks.
Yeah, Honorable Schneerman.
Thanks, Comrade Chen. Sorry for being a few minutes late, but I just wanted to... just to the DG, my question really relates to the issue of vacancy rates. And obviously, as she's explained, that there's funded and unfunded posts. But it's particularly around the funded posts and the fact that we still had a 30% vacancy rate. I just wanted to, the first thing that I'd like to find out is, what impact is that having on the ability of the department to roll out its programs? Is it having a negative impact? That would be the first question. Aligned to that, the National Treasury this morning were indicating to us that in terms of Program 5, Freight Logistics and Corridor Development, there was significant underspending. Now, yeah, they say the actual spending for the year was 49.2%. Okay. And they then attribute, well, then they go on to say as well that there's an extremely high vacancy rate in that sector. So again, it would be a similar question. I mean, that high vacancy rate, is that impacting on the ability of that program to spend? Just to get clarity on that. I think my further question would really be, though, is, I mean, you were saying that that there's a problem in finding the requisite skills. And that it's not, we just don't have some of these skills. What do we do then? Because obviously it's going to impact in the future. So that would just be around the skills issue, and then the vacancies. And then, John, it's probably not part of the last year's expenditure, but I think the DG has raised something here on page 22, and that was the department requesting additional funding, etc., and only being given 6 billion instead of 44 billion. But I'm just trying to get an understanding of, you know, what are the critical areas that we're not getting funding for? And obviously we can't always get all the funds that we want, but what are the really critical areas that would then suffer? And that that we would probably be saying we can't really do without, but obviously we're not getting. I'd just like to get an understanding of that. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Mashego. Thank you, Chairperson. My clarity will be around the SANRAL because it is one of the most important entities, and I would like to know the type of monitoring involved in SONRA, because immediately we go into our roads, we see a lot of infrastructural inefficiencies. So what role does the department play in making sure that the money given to SONRA is worth our traveling daily in the streets? And I was also going to go to Sofagalula, because Honorable Fabs was also inquiring about it. Do you regard it now as under expenditure, or because the Department of Education came in and did not give you the money as it was budgeted for? Or I don't, because somewhere the Department of Education came in, and I just want to understand what happened thereafter. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Honorable Swart.
Chair, just an easy one. On page 7, the DG refers to an under expenditure on the socio-economic impact of the 2010 Soccer World Cup, and an under expenditure. What does that mean? Sorry, I just don't understand it.
Any further questions? Before whilst both members are thinking of other questions, DG, just on policy related issues, who is responsible for? Either it's transport and public enterprises. Who's responsible for policy of entities like SAA? Because public enterprises came to Parliament to ask for the special adjustments appropriation. But who's responsible? We have as Parliament given them the special adjustments funds, but our experience it's to our disadvantage as travelers, you know, it's to our advantage. And I hope that maybe you were lucky as you came this way, but I know that one of your staff was also affected by our allocation to SAA, which is to our disadvantage. You know, so that whilst other members will be coming with their questions, how do you monitor funds that go to municipalities whilst you have high vacancy rates in relation to senior positions? Municipalities don't have capacity. How do you assist them so that the monies that are transferred to municipalities can be finally efficiently, not necessarily being spent, but efficiently being spent? What does the department do? I know that it's a provincial responsibility, but when it comes to provincial roads, which are in a terrible state, what does the department, the national department, do to assist the provinces to ensure that these roads do not go to an extent of, being closed, whilst the provinces are also not spending on transport infrastructure? I know, to set an example, in the northwest, many of the roads, some of them have got potholes of one meter width to 1.5 meter width, but they underspent on transport. So I just wanted to know on that one. The other question is on, at the end of the financial year, especially in March, the department spent 19.3% on consultants. In 1 month, 19.3. Why was it important? That's according to the information that we got from National Treasury. So I just want to understand that one. And I'm happy that although I made a mistake when we started because of time pressure, I couldn't introduce you. I'm happy that your CFO is here so that he can assist us in that regard. So I will be happy if you can respond to those. I think those are... no, the other one. Public transport. You spent 40.1%. And we regard public transport to be very important for our people to be able to travel, especially with petrol price quickly getting so expensive. Petrol is getting expensive, and all of us would want to go the public transport way. Why is that huge underspending, and how are you going to address it so that there can be an improvement? Finally, it's still related to police. Yeah, it's still related to police. I still don't understand why when somebody gets injured in a motor accident, the person has to go to a private hospital because they will access the road accident fund. Why the private hospital and not the public hospital? Because if you are involved in a car accident, you are told that the injured must go to a private hospital so that it can be covered by road accident fund. Why is that the case? Thank you. You may respond to those ones.
Chairperson, thank you very much. If I may start with the Honourable Chairperson, with your permission, I'd just like to split the questions amongst the three of us. We kind of understand the logic of how we're going to split them. If I may start with the first set of questions. One, the issue around the port regulator. Because we actually did appoint the port regulator, and the board was established in 2006. The challenge has been the port regulator board moving forward to establishing staff, starting to use money, and implementing the program and setting itself the program. We know, as a matter of fact, that they spent the first 3 months orientating themselves in the industry, trying to understand what they needed to do, doing public consultations, engaging with the stakeholders. One of their biggest meetings was with Transnet, who are really going to be affected by the existence of the port regulator. And we now have concluded at this stage, or at least they've concluded the appointment of the CEO. That's the good news. The bad news is they've poached one of my staff. So, in effect, we are one less on freight logistics because they have appointed that person as the CEO of the port regulator. But in that process of establishment of a new entity, then resulted the delay in expenditure, because in fact they were not spending money as such. They were not developing programs. They were still, the first things were about establishing an office, finding an office in Durban, sorting out their accommodation, etc., etc. So we would treat that entire delay process as an establishment period. Now, from now onwards, I hope we'll be able to see greater work with the new CEO at the helm moving with speed to start really implementing the programs. They've done quite an extensive strategic plans for themselves as the board, etc., but I'm certain they can't even start implementing that until, and that's when the money will be required. So we're also quite hesitant to transfer money to them and not quite clear about how they're going to implement. And as soon as the CEO is in place, in fact, we'll be able to do that. The second question was around the Lekgotla decision on some of these programs. It really is difficult. I think the one thing that we would want Lekgotla to take a decision on is the institutionalization of October Transport Month. It's an international phenomenon. We've done it in South Africa for the last 3 years, and we would want Lekgotla to confirm that South Africa would continue to have an October Transport Month, the nature and form of which would reflect what we've been able to achieve over the past years. The only reality is that it's been done on an annual basis, and every year the Khutla takes a decision, yes, we're going to do it again this year. Then we find savings for it, yes. Because they may turn around and say, we overdid it last year, we shouldn't do anything this year. Or we think we're very effective last year, let's give it a break and actually celebrate in the following year. But I think the critical question we're going to ask is, how do we institutionalize it? Do we do it every 2 years, every 3 years? What is the nature, content, and form? Only then can we really budget for it. Because October Transport Month is done on the basis of collection of information. Firstly, there's a national plan, but also provincial plan. What MECs want to do in their areas, what projects they want to launch, what conferences they want to hold, etc., etc. And that only really is brought together, not 3 years in advance, but on an annual basis, for obvious reasons. Then there are other issues where we are sometimes compelled, and there's quite a lot of international pressure for us to do things, and out of the goodness of our hearts and broader international obligations, we agree. On an issue like that, you can't foresee that one will be requested to do that, like the AU conferences. At the last AU conference, there are bids that are put forward, and there is a suggestion South Africa should host, because South Africa should provide leadership on this issue, and South Africa agrees to host. But maybe South Africa agrees to host on the 1st of September, and the MTEC process is gone, because that's when the AU conference is happening, at which the request is made for South Africa to host next year. So only then does the request come, etc. Those ones we'll try and manage. We can find a way of estimating what they're likely to be, but they're also quite unpredictable. I would indicate one of the biggest events we're going to host this year, which also came through international pressure, is something called AFIRAN, which basically has all the ministers of the world, all the DGs of the world, all the airline CEOs of the world, etc., etc., arriving in South Africa in November, and we are hosting it. You know, you know, one of those things. That's taken as a decision in a meeting in November last year. So those events, those big events, normally come in that form. And it's normally what we do is we go to cabinet, we request permission to host, and then we find savings and we budget for it accordingly. And some of them are related to strategic foreign policy issues, which may mean it's a good thing for us to host this particular issue at a particular time. The third issue I'd like to respond to, the issue about Shovagalula. Shovagalula is basically our, if you like, our grant system program in transport, where we give bicycles to learners who live very far from their schools. And when we started the program, we started it and it's focused in rural areas primarily. It's done through the schools with the teachers so that there's some kind of institutional management, and there are also institutional arrangements made for the repair and further maintenance of those bicycles moving into the future. We had, as I indicated, set ourselves a target of 1 million by 2010, because that's where social development gives grants, we are supposed to give bicycles. Because that's, transport is a very economic area. This is one area where we have social intervention of, in its true form. And that particular program has seen some delays, and the delays are directly related to the country's capacity to manufacture. I think we overestimated. By the way, we can confirm bicycles are not manufactured in South Africa. They are assembled. So parts come from elsewhere, and they get assembled. Through the industrial policy program of the economic cluster, though, we are looking at the establishment of a bicycle manufacturing plant, which will ensure that that capacity is in South Africa. We ask CTI to give them the necessary incentives to set it up so that we can benefit. But currently, we buy from people who buy parts and assemble. So the rate at which they assemble, the rate at which those parts come, etc., is then what we have to be landed with. And we run the risk of absorbing most of the bicycles in the country if we were to force our way. Then we'd get into a real difficulty with the cycling associations that order as well at around the same time with us. But Shovagalula basically is a showing program. If I may just respond to the other question on Shovagalula. Shovagalula is not part of the scholar transport program, even though it all affects learners and scholars. Scholar transport is then meant to be provincially or even municipal run public or transport, dedicated transport, meant again for under similar circumstances where, for instance, it's not pure rural, we're not able to provide bicycles, and urban areas more, where provinces would be able to provide the scholar. They are currently providing scholar transport. What we were engaging with Department of Education on is the transfer of that function to transport. We sincerely believe education is very good at teaching and education. We consider the transportation, even of learners, to really be our core competence. However, I'm sure that we don't agree with the Department of Education on that level of priority. So the decision they've taken, but also what also happens is in provincial budgets, they have an allocation for scholar transport. And this suggestion would have meant that they would need to relinquish that budget and shift it over to the transport department from the education departments. And I'm sure they were not willing to do that. And that's basically the discussion that we will continue to have with education until we clarify who has absolute responsibility for scholar transport between ourselves and them, or jointly, how do we manage it much more effectively. Members would also know that there have been incidences in Gauteng particularly, where beginning of school year, the service providers say they're not going to transport because they haven't been paid, etc., etc., and yeah, some of the problems associated with that. The next important issue is the vacancy issue. With respect to vacancies, I would indicate, yes, we do. Of course, we see quite a significant negative impact where there are vacancies in areas where we could have moved with speed. And I'll be quite honest and indicate one of those areas is road regulation, where we've had chief directors that have come and gone in a very short space of time. In fact, we had a chief director who was appointed. We're quite happy we're rolling with the program. She got poached. She's now the CEO of TITA. If members will recall the TITA, the TITA issue. She is now the new CEO there, so we've lost her again, and we're scratching our heads about where to go next. So areas like road regulation, regulations, programs, etc., will suffer if, for instance, we lose a critical individual at a time. That just means we need to keep things on hold, or use junior staff to some extent, supplemented with consultants for that period and contract workers just to tide us over until we're able to manage to fill the post. In those kind of areas as well, it's sometimes difficult because it's very specialized. The road regulation area is highly specialized. You can't just employ anybody. You need to employ somebody who's worked in that area, and it's largely people who know the ins and outs of that. In the second area, we've also seen some negative impact of vacancies is road or rail economic regulation, which has had significant delays because we just can't employ the appropriate people in that area because we just can't find them. That one is much more important. And we've delayed significantly. We've actually had to use our freight people to do the work on road rail economic regulation when they have time, kind of thing. And that's not a healthy situation at all. So there are critical areas where we're not moving with speed. But also in our recruitment, we try and fill the areas in the critical service delivery areas. Economic regulation is a good thing to do, but it's not a train smash if we don't start it in 6 months. But in public transport subsidies, you must have somebody there because the payments go out every month. So we kind of prioritize like that in terms of filling our posts and shifting people around. The issue of what we do, we've tried a number of instances. We are a participant in GIPSA, which is attempting to source critical skills internationally on behalf of the entire government. We have our own programs, such as the Centers of Excellence, which basically look to developing those critical skills in universities. We pay universities of Stellenbosch, KwaZulu-Natal, Pretoria, and others amounts of money for bursaries for transport students, as transport specialist students. But unfortunately, that also has medium to long-term rewards. We won't get those students out tomorrow. They will come at a much later stage, and you know, they may not stay in the Department of Transport for long. They may be poached by somebody else and go somewhere else. The areas which are critical, really, for operations, we normally treat as a kind of frontline areas. Whether it's budget allocation or staff, we would prioritize our rail services because we understand the critical importance of commuter services in that area. one, not that we don't experience those problems, but when you do experience significant problems in those areas, you start to lose assets, as has well been demonstrated in areas such as Tshwane. Commuters don't respond very well to delays in that sector. So we tend to be more sensitive around managing those areas better and prioritizing them, because there's a critical path analysis that we do which indicates the kind of, if we're not going to do anything here, do we stand to lose money physically? And it's those areas that we prioritize. I can indicate rail is one of those sectors. The less we spend on rail, the more we will degrade the current existing assets and will actually run the system down to nothing. So that's a high-risk area. I would suggest very soon, Honorable Chair, we'll reach that stage in roads. We've already reached it in rail, but we're going to reach that stage in roads where, as Mpumalanga is the good illustration, if we don't start making the correct types of investment in the road sector, we're going to have areas that are impassable. I have case studies in certain areas that are indicating that farmers are no longer transporting their goods to market because the roads are impassable. They've converted from tar to road. So that's an area that, as I indicated, we're giving a red warning light as a country we must really start focusing on. In the bus area as well, we think that is a critical area, particularly on service provision, and that's why we commit to finalizing this discussion with National Treasury. The commuters have not decreased, have only increased. The areas where buses travel to have only increased. In the rationalization in the new integrated public transport networks, the numbers are not getting smaller, and therefore, by definition, the allocation should only increase at that pace. However, because of the rationalization of the old bus system and the new bus system, et cetera, all that is kind of trying to hang together to a new approach, which then should be funded at significantly different levels in order to enable us to move forward. The issue around policy and socioeconomic impact, when we started with 2010, the various divisions in the department were given areas of work to do with respect to 2010. The policy side had to actually do this project called Analyzing the Socioeconomic Impact of 2010 on everything that on transport, on the economy, on employment, on people's lives, on improvement, on quality of life, etc., etc. But they were quite able to start doing that exercise in-house without necessarily outsourcing it. But more importantly, we shifted our focus to needing to do that socioeconomic analysis later rather than at the beginning, as the infrastructure investment started having an impact. So that's more, rather than it being done previously, that's now going to be done, you know, later in the 2010 cycle, so that we can actually do impact, real impact assessment rather than projections. And that will then also be now combined with the closure report, so to speak, after 2010, as 2010 ends, which we're required to submit with CIFA. Honourable Chair, that would bring my responses to the end. Can I just ask the CFO to respond on the late invoice payment schedule suspense account, Mr. Mkonyama on the local government issue, I think. Oh, final issue, aviation and SAA. Department of Transport is responsible for aviation policy. Department of Transport is responsible for what we call very important instruments we call the BASAs, the bilateral air services agreements between countries, which is the permission between one country to fly to another country. The Department of Transport is also responsible for what we call airlift strategy, which is a strategy of how and what airlift the country should have to promote tourism and where we should be flying to, increase frequencies in particular destinations, reduce them in others. That's all our business. However, DPE is responsible for the management of SAA as an entity. So SAA does not report to Transport. It is an instrument of implementing our airlift strategy and our aviation targets, but they don't account to us in the way that AXA accounts to us. So they account to DPE, and within DPE, previously you remember that they were inside Transnet. Recently they were incorporated, which means they are now also standalone from Transnet, and they report directly to the Minister of DPE. So whilst we would have not really had much to do. We had some influence because we were given an opportunity to critique their restructuring exercise, but also their proposal for the balloon payment. Really, it wasn't our decision because it wasn't a transport. We were able to critique it to say, well, from an aviation perspective, does it make sense? Are they really saying they can do the cuts that they will, etc.? But finally, it's a DPE decision as to how they get financed as such, because DPE is then responsible for the institution, the viability of the institution, the operations of the institution, the financing of the institution. We determine the policy environment within which they operate, not the money they get. So that's the way it's the same arrangement of DME and Eskom in that way. So that's the difference. Can I just then, Chairperson, ask Mr. Pretorius and then Mr. Mukonyama to respond to the balance? Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. The first issue is the issue of late invoices in a number of instances. When the work is done and we do not receive an invoice on time to pay before the end of March, that expenditure actually becomes an under expenditure because our accounting system is still on a cash basis. We do, however, show those as accruals in our financial statements. And our accruals on the financial statements is an amount of just over 15 million, which had we received those invoices on time, we could have paid that and could have reduced the under expenditure by that amount of 15 million. With respect to the bidding process, you'll see in the slide, and particularly under Program 2, where there were delays in the bidding process with transport policy. The challenge there is somewhat the same as getting appropriate skills. In that area in particular, many bids that we receive are not up to standard for policy development, and they, for instance, find out that people don't have the skills, and they need to, in some cases, call for new bids. And it's also one of the reasons why a lot of work gets done in-house rather than getting outsourced. The issue of the payment schedule that relates to the Gautrain. Now, the Gautrain budget is worked out exactly according to milestones that are getting signed off. And the whole process is very, very rigidly entrenched in how milestones are going to be achieved and when. And there are penalties going for not achieving that. Now, up to now, the capital portion that we are funding are paid exactly according to the payment schedule, and the payment schedule has the milestones embedded in that payment schedule have all been met. And that is why the Gautrain expenditure shows some large spikes. The milestones were achieved and the funds paid according to those payment schedules. The issue of NATIS funding in a suspense account, and also the same reason is why we spent a large amount on consulting services in March, why the expenditure shows in March. Just some background on this. The transaction fees on the NATIS system were approved sometime or started kicking in sometime last year. In the past, both the department and the provinces paid towards the maintenance of the NATIS system. As the transaction fees started being collected by provinces, the provinces' portion of funding the NATIS has reduced, and it's going to reduce until the provinces no longer contribute at all towards the NATIS system, because the intention is for the transaction fees to fund the NATIS system. What happened was that the department paid amounts towards NATIS, which included the the contributions that the provinces would have paid throughout the year. But because we couldn't at that point split between what the department would have paid and what the provinces would have paid, all of those amounts were held in a suspense account. Only in March did we obtain a split, because we couldn't just do that in an ad hoc manner. We had to really investigate every single milestone that was signed off, because this will be audited, to find out exactly which portion was the portion belonging to the National Department of Transport and which portion must still be recovered from provinces, or rather not from provinces, from the transaction fees. For that reason, we journalized 52.7 million rand to expenditure in March, although that expenditure was incurred. We actually paid the bills much earlier. What will happen is that the transaction fees that were collected by the Road Traffic Management Corporation until the NATIS function is transferred to the Road Traffic Management Corporation. They pay the transaction fees over to us, and we surrender the transaction fees to the revenue fund. The amount that we are holding in suspense that we paid on behalf of provinces, some 58 million, we will be requesting back on the adjusted budget as self-funding from the transaction fees that we surrendered to the revenue fund. Thank you.
Thanks, thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There was a question on how do you do monitoring of transfers to municipalities, whereas you also don't have capacity internally. Honourable Chair, the monitoring and evaluation program in the department, specifically for the public transport and infrastructure grant, is in the main outsource. It's basically 100% outsource. So we use professional companies to do the monitoring to the municipalities. And I must say that the reports we're getting of good quality. It's just that they do confirm that there is some amount of under expenditure at municipal level. We have already embarked on a number of processes. We have sent teams for technical support to Polokwane and Mbombela. We are considering Rustenburg and Mangaung to go to augment their capacity and accelerate implementation of, in particular, PTIS or 2010 projects. There was also one question related to SANRAL in terms of how do you do oversight over SANRAL and the fact that there are bad roads out there. What is SANRAL doing? Are we effectively monitoring SANRAL? Just in terms of how we monitor SANRAL, Chair, the Minister approves the SRAD plan every year. We do sign an MOU with them every year, a memorandum of understanding every year, and through our public entity oversight branch, we enter into shareholders' compact on the business side. Now, I'm not sure in terms of particular rules that are in those best shapes, but ever since we started transferring back some of the provincial roads to SANRAL, where we started with national roads at about 6,000 kilometers, we are now at 16, and the target is going to be 20,000 kilometers by 2010. And where we have taken over, where SANRAL has taken over those roads, I must indicate, Chairperson, that they've been maintained very well. We then, as a sector, have identified the issue of roads, the infrastructure, as a big problem. It's actually coming to haunt us very, very soon, as the DG has indicated. In the next transport quarter, we will be reporting to the principals on the status of the road infrastructure in the country as a whole, the whole 750 kilometers kilometers, 750,000 kilometers of roads in the country, their status, and the level of investments that they would need for us to be able to maintain them well. So we are going to cover all the roads in the country, including those in the local authorities.
Can I just stop there, you there, Chile? You know, we understand that part, but what I wanted to know is, money is available in a province for road infrastructure development. The money is not utilized. What then? When the roads are terrible, I even gave an example of Northwest, that they underspent, but the roads are in a terrible state. That's what I'm interested in.
Thanks, Chairperson. Unlike the transfers that we do, and we are the transferring department where we have a direct lever, we do not have a direct lever on provincial spending, but as part of the implementation plan on the trials and dates that we are going to present to the principals is a combined mechanism to make sure that each and every province is able not only to spend but to improve the road infrastructure in their provinces, and we are then going to use mechanisms of perhaps also assisting them, providing technical support, because SANRAL does have the technical support. So apart from the transfers of roads to SANRAL, apart from the transfer monies that we do oversight on, we are going to increase the leverage that we have going forward in terms of the integrated infrastructure plan that we are going to present on the 12th and 13th of June.
But you know, Chief, what I want to understand, I gave an example, we have roads in the Northwest. Who should we, firstly, where does the money come from? Who transfer? If it's National Treasure, tell us it's National Treasure. So that we ask them, why are you not monitoring that the money is utilized so that those roads can be improved? So it should be clear.
Chairperson, if I may assist, the roads budget works on the basis of a split. The national department receives what is called national roads money, which primarily goes to SANRAL, even the money to facilitate once provincial roads are proclaimed. There is an intergovernmental fiscal transfer that happens via national treasury directly to provinces, which then also gets reprioritized by provincial treasuries, amounts of which we have no control over, projects which we have no even oversight over, expenditure patterns we have no knowledge of. And I think we've been raising that as a critical issue, because that means the national functions of oversight over roads is limited to what is defined in law as the national road network, and the functional oversight that we could perform if the funding came through transport over provinces on the balance of the network does not lie as a responsibility that we have. So we speak to provinces around proclamations. Oh, so what are you wanting us to proclaim? Not what is your budget for roads and what are you doing in what areas? Because that's been separated out into the intergovernmental fiscal transfer. That also goes for municipalities, in fact, so in those instances. So it's an issue we should rationalize the institutional arrangements on and resolve, because we don't even know how much they get or why they get that and all of that. So it creates a problem.
All right. So it means it's your joint responsibility, because you transfer to SANRAL.
For the national.
Yes. For the national networks.
And the ones to be proclaimed.
Okay.
Yes. We don't know this thing or our participation. No. Our participation in what we call the intergovernmental fiscal transfers to provinces is limited to the extent that we can start having any oversight over provinces with respect to that. So we are the National Department, SANRAL, and Proclaimed Roads. And EPWP, which is now a new allocation. EPWP is a new allocation. It does come through us as an amount of $3 billion over MTF, and that we will have some control over. Through that, we do Zibambele, Siadendela, all of Gundulashe, and all those
EPWP projects in provinces, but they are small rural road access. The bulk of the amount that goes to provinces is really under National Treasury.
Mahesh.
Chair, maybe I should confirm that, I mean, obviously under our constitution, roads is a concurrent function. So there's authority over it by national department as well as provincial. But, you know, in saying that, there's obviously two mechanisms for funding, and one is, as the DG is saying, our funding or allocations which are then appropriated by Parliament to the department, as well as the provincial infrastructure grant, which has a very large roads component within it. And beyond that, it's the equitable share that provinces have that they can also use for whatever they like, including roads. But then within the sort of political process, there is the MinMex of transport, the minister and the MECs, which they then can meet and decide over things like roads and other transport issues. And then within the departmental process, there's the Roads Coordination Committee, which has a meeting between the head of the infrastructure section within the Department of Transport, as well as heads of roads and transport sections, well, road sections basically of provinces. So there is a regular interaction between the department and provinces regarding roads. We're not saying that then, you know, the DG has, you know, that kind of oversight, but there is at least some sort of look at who should do what, how much they should spend, etc. And while that doesn't take away the concurrency in the function of the constitution, there at least is some coordination of it. The roads agency is also part of that.
So because I'm still not, actually, when we talk about those roads, who should we call to account? Who should, there's no spending on those roads?
Provincial roads. The HODs are accountable for provincial roads.
Before I give you, Mr. Kumede.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think here we hit the same problem of concurrence, where now the DG does not have power over the head of department or the MEC and so forth, and therefore they cannot implement. And I think that is a political problem that has to be attended to by politicians who rule the constitution.
Now, it should be clear to us so that as policymakers, we would know what to do. Yeah. No, I think that's fine. Let's continue. But on the other things that you want to respond to. But DG, as you leave, please, as early as, let's say Tuesday, because I think the CFO is here, it's easy for him to get information from his system. We need information on the frills that were announced by the Minister of Finance last year, that departments are going to cut down on unnecessary costs, like all those. We need information, detailed information, not necessarily that it's so much, but we need detailed information in that regard.
Thanks, Chair. In fact, it was the last but one. I think the other issue on Shovakalola that you just indicated, and perhaps just a word on the delays in the building. Perhaps the phrase is just all embracing, but the majority of cases is where we went more than twice or even three times out into the market because we couldn't get people. So it was not necessarily the delay as deliberate delays, but You find out, you go out, you have an estimate of, say, 3 million for a project. The bids come out as 10 million. They just shock you. You need to redo the whole thing. So this is the majority of the cases that are indicated as bidding processes delays. That's something to indicate.
Yeah.
Honorable Chairperson, you had raised an issue around public transport expenditure at 40.1%. I'm struggling to find it, but would like to refer you to slide 24, which shows you the expenditure on public transport and shows a variance, therefore an under expenditure of only 0.38%. Oh, the amount is 40 million. I thought you were saying 40%. Oh, okay, then I got confused. Okay. So that would indicate as a percentage it's 0.38. This is one of the areas where we never run short of money. We literally in the capital areas of public transport expenditure is one of the few areas where you have zeros. The area where you do have some under expenditure relates to goods and services, and we've provided the explanation on the next pages. In my explanation and input, I provided an account for a 20 million, which was really about the financing of rail into the future and why that exercise didn't go ahead as the major contributor to that. In fact, without that under expenditure remains insignificant. Without that rollover request for 20 million, which was to do this exercise of the future financing model for rail. But I thought I'd given an explanation for that. We normally run out of money in public transport rather than underspend. In the buses, we're notorious for running out of money in December, long before March, and plead with Treasury and say, hey, these people are going to kill us now. We've run out of money. And we have to wait until the new financial year.
I think it will also be important in your next week's response to give us an idea of financial impact of the trains that have been touched in the previous financial year and how it has affected service in those areas. CFO, you wanted to respond?
Thank you, Chair. The one question about the RAF and why people are allowed to use private hospitals. Currently, the whole drive is to change the whole system of compensating victims of road accidents and to set limits on certain claims. Because at the moment there are no limits, and that's really the drive behind restructuring the whole road accident fund and limit the claims up to a certain amount. But we cannot force people to go to a specific hospital or even a state hospital. There's no such provision.
Mr. Gomez?
Thanks, Chairperson. But if we are going to have limits, are the private hospitals going to be willing to accept people? Because their condition normally is 50,000 rands or so cash before you get admitted. And would you prefer to land in a very busy public hospital after an accident yourself? I mean, these are the dynamics that we've got to grapple with as a nation before we just take decisions rushing. Because sometimes it may be a difference between being assisted now and being assisted the following day if you survive.
So I think the new act and so on is not going to say that a person cannot get medical attention, but it's going to, for instance, remove cases like there's one particular claim a very, very large claim of billions because a very rich foreigner had an accident in South Africa. And that is the kind of massive claims that we want to limit.
Yes, Chair. You know, I said under my breath, yes, it has been abused by foreigners. But I think one of the realities are that, yes, there is that problem, and I think we do recognize it. But part of the problem as well is the delays in the payment of this. And I'm talking about the majority of South Africans being delayed payment. And often when we're looking at constituency complaints and so on and concerns, you know, you ring up the relevant office and they say, yeah, well, you know, it's the funds aren't through yet and, yeah, we're still looking and you must understand this takes 2 years. I can't understand. Is it because we don't have the funds that it takes 2 years? Because some of them are open and shut cases and invariably belong, you know, or linked to vulnerable people, really. And I think, to me, this is where the big problem is in the road accident fund. Is this delay to the vulnerable? But I want you to actually, Chair, just clarify something before we moved off in this transport area. You see, what's worrying me here, and believe you me, I'm very impressed with my province, the SkyTrain project, very impressed. But, you know, we're allocating quite a large amount of money here, a significant amount for this. And we are working on the milestones, fine, project management. But what would be helpful to learn from the Department of Transport and the DG? Have they sent out from time to time an independent inspectorate to monitor this? You see, this smacks of a situation which we could get where what you see on paper and on modelling plans is there, but when you go and check, it's not there. And I'm just a little bit concerned, notwithstanding that some of the very people involved in this are my dearest friends. But nevertheless, I'm a bit concerned that it's such an enormous project that we may not be monitoring the expenditure as effectively as we should. The other aspect linked to this, Chairperson, when we say, you know, it's not our function and it's a concurrency and so on and so forth, was with respect to that infrastructure and SANRAL, which may well have been answered on slide, I can't actually see it, but I think it's 68. Constitutionally and, you know, through our legislation, do we not have any control or sanction against under-expenditure on infrastructure? Is there no way we can provide increased pressure there? And finally, with respect to Treasury, I think it's just over a year ago that we were told about these very sharp plans that were underway to develop what was called a sharp monitoring instrument of capital expenditure and expenditure on infrastructure. And there were a couple of pilots in the running there. Now, we never hear Treasury mentioning these when they come to hearings. So I don't know if it's still an academic exercise. Is it happening? And, you know, is there any impact on the work that Transport is doing? Because they have a number of, you know, high expenditure projects. And I'm not suggesting that they're not achieving it, but I'm just saying, you know, where does Treasury interface with this lot and so on?
Yeah, are you okay?
Okay.
I think we'll have to move towards closure, and if you can be brief so that I can close the meeting.
Honorable Chairperson, the issue around vulnerable people under RAF, we think is largely to do with the processes within RAF, which for a number of years have dogged the system and have been quite problematic. But we appointed a CEO a couple of years ago who's really attempted to, as we call it, clear the backlog
quite significantly, rationalize the process, circumvent it, make it shorter, so that the easy cases can go through very quickly. And then you're left with the difficult cases where you need to do a lot more investigation, you need the police to verify, you need, or where there are complicated health issues which then need further investigation. The reports that we get from RAF do indicate a increased turnaround time for cases generally, a reduced caseload, but again, as we all know, they continue to face the challenge of liquidity. And that doesn't help, because in a sense it affects the rate at which some of these improvements can happen. But we're looking at all of those issues together in order to be able to assist them. But we believe over the last couple of years, whilst we were ensuring the turnaround of RAF, we believe that's starting to show some results. Even RAF has been to certain of the committees here in Parliament, and I think we're all rather impressed with what they've been able to achieve, at least from that perspective. So we hope that will move with speed, but it's largely influenced by external factors such as the budget that they have. And we have adopted an approach of not minding a slowdown if it's going to result in much more efficient processes moving forward. But I think that's something that we'll be able to control. On Gautrain, Jefferson, we have a team inside the department that looks at, in order to facilitate payment, and looks at what Gautrain submits to us. But in addition to that, outside of the Gautrain team, there is an independent assessor that does the independent assessment work. I mean, quite honestly, you should be more impressed with your province in the way that this project has been managed. They probably have, above the implementation team, three or four other layers of monitoring frameworks. They've just got a monitoring framework on something called socioeconomic impact, which is done outside, that assesses whether they're creating the right jobs, whether, you know, a whole lot of, so it's all happening. But above that sits a committee that is currently chaired by the MEC, which has representation from Treasury, ourselves, and others, which basically is the management agency over Gautrain, which basically overlooks even those reports and monitors their action. Sanctions on under expenditure, I think that largely the sanctions are determined by the nature of the instrument we use for transfer. So DORA seems to have, and we think the conditionalities on DORA may or may not assist you to have penalties, because the withholding of funds is always a difficult thing. So it depends on the payment method and the extent to which you can penalize agencies, provinces, municipalities for underperformance. PTIS is one example point in case. We have to transfer money for 2010 to ensure that it happens. But if Rustenburg sits around and does nothing, we can't recall that money because it's already stipulated in DORA. You know, so then we must say to them, like, how do we help you spend it? So the penalties are limited, but I'm sure we all try and maneuver within that framework to assist. There isn't that we, as a system, financial system, we really don't have strong penalties. So you don't spend now, you don't get it next month. You're kind of not allowed to do that kind of thing. So that remains a challenge for all of us, I guess. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think the Treasury will maybe elaborate on this, on the monitoring of spending on infrastructure, because Treasury initiated a system. All the public entities that spend money on infrastructure, like SANRAL and the SARCC, they must compile a schedule of projects which they submit to both to us and to Treasury every quarter, with every single infrastructure project listed there, and where one can see what progress is being made.
Yeah, no, normally we don't need the response now, because we're still coming, I think, in the few quarters that come, even on transfers, we're still coming back to you on infrastructure and transfer payments, so we're still coming. But I just wanted to, before I close the meeting, that, you know, Rustenburg, it's my hometown. It's my hometown. really worried about progress there. They are very worried, make no mistake. But if you can see people marching there, demanding that they want progress, you should not be surprised. But it was just by the by. Thanks very much, members, for having spent your time in this meeting. It was fruitful, and we expect that come the MTBPS, you will not be coming to say give more money to those people and whatever, whatever, like the other culprits who end up not doing as they promised. So, thanks very much for even okay before us, Mr. Treasury.